Hello and welcome to the AI Future Show with me, your host and guide, Professor Andy Pardo. With me today, I'm very honoured to have Phil, who is the founder, creator of EchoBorg, which is an amazing piece of technology. It's the first time I experienced EchoBorg was actually at the AI and robotics conference that I ran last year. And we set up, or Phil and his team set up EchoBorg as one of the streams of activity at the conference. And I have to say, Phil, every time I talk to anyone that attended the conference, they always talk about EchoBorg and they are always like, oh, wow, what a fantastic experience. So it was the real sort of crowning, sort of jewel in the crown, as it were, of the event. And for me, it made what is normally with conferences and, you know, quite sort of formulaic in the sense that you have a couple of stages, you have talkers throughout the day, and you know, you break for coffee, you break for lunch, but it really made it a really dynamic event and a dynamic conference. So it was to be honest with you, I didn't really know what I was letting myself in for, sort of having this as part of the conference. So it was a great experience both for me, and I was lucky to be able to find a bit of time to actually experience part of one of the sessions. But as I say, everyone at the conference that I spoke to, both during the day and loads of feedback afterwards, were like, oh my God, that was the best bit of the conference. So an amazing, amazing thing. And I'm going to hand over to you now to introduce yourself properly and maybe talk a little bit about what EchoBorg is, where it's sort of come from, the history behind it, and sort of how it's been evolving over the years, and where you sort of see that going. So first of all, please, Phil, introduce yourself to the audience.
Well, thank you for such a glowing introduction, Andy. It was that particular show was one of a series that we did in October of last year to sort of prepare for a really big year for us on the EchoBorg side this year, which unfortunately has all gone to hell in a COVID handbag. And I'll come to that in a moment as I give you a bit of history on how it fits together and what we're intending to do with it. So my part of the EchoBorg experience is a co-founder with a crazy individual called Rick Lander, who's similarly kind of mix of production engineering, live casting direction, interactive media, has been working in this area for decades. And brings a real skill, a tenacity, a nuance to how we've created the EchoBorg, but also how the show itself works, because we've run it in theatres. We ran it in the corner of a side room at your extremely interesting conference last year. I mean, I love watching the show, but I just want to clone myself, you know, so I could watch everything at the same time. We've run it in universities. We took it back to one of the people who coined the term. But let me get to that in order. So the first bit is me. What's my gig? What am I doing building systems like EchoBorg with Rick and the broader team here? I've always been interested, Andy, in talking to computers. In 1982, my father bought home a ZX Spectrum, a loaner from a mate at work. And he essentially, looking back on it, essentially his job was as a computer, a stock accountant, a computer in the day. And he brought it back to me, and I was 1982, and I built a system that you could talk to. So I asked it. Yeah, it said, hello, how are you? And I came back with, I'm good or I'm bad. And we chased away into a little conversation and then saved it to a C60 you know, sort of cassette or something. I mean, it's, you know, hysterical stuff, really. But that was my sort of stake in the ground. And then over the next best part of 20 years, I sort of felt like I was sort of waiting for the moment to appear when that would make more sense. Because in 1982, there was no internet, there was nothing at all. So between those two periods of time, I was an electrical and mechanical engineer. I did quality assurance on production lines. I trained as a cabinet maker and made arts and crafts furniture. I'd studied as an anthropologist, which is actually very relevant to what we're doing with Ecoborg and what elsewhere my company since 2002 does as well, is to apply social scientific rigor and methodologies to the discovery process and then to the experience. Because, you know, there is this sort of line right now that a lot of what is going on in the world from 15 years ago with legacy players like Artificial Solutions and Credit Virtual and No Hold, it was about replacing humans. And the data scientists, I'm not sure whether scientists got involved in that, but that's another discussion. Sort of the top end of that are doing the same thing. So anyhow, so back to my world. In 2000, when I came to the end of my anthropology degree, I did some research in a virtual world, Andy. So in 1997-98, on a dial-up modem, I was in a three-dimensional virtual world called Meridian 59, looking for people's perception of identity. Now, this was not la-di-da. This was not a master's degree or a doctorate or anything like that. This was just a fella in his early 30s who'd come from engineering, doing some research into a brave new world. Yeah, and sure. And it hooked me, Andy. I met an avatar in a bar, an AI in a bar, in a virtual world in 1997, and decided to sort of swim in. So, and I know that you've got similarly long-standing interest in the sort of the context and history, Andy. Before we swing back into Ecoborg a bit,
sure.
What do you think is the most interesting echo from the sort of early days right now?
Oh, that's a good question. So, I mean, since I can remember, I've been fascinated with computers and technology. I was writing computer programs before I even had my first computer, and I was just always just so intrigued that you could type commands into this system and it would interpret that and do something. For me, it was like magic, right? I just couldn't, and I wanted to open the box and understand the hardware, and that was my fascination. And I had my school, actually, my year was the very first year that they did computer studies as a sort of A-level, and they had an entrance exam for this, and I was dead lucky. I was like, they had two classes of 30, so I came in at number 60, so I just got in to study computers at school. And my teacher, as a guy called Mr. Fry, was an amazing person, and I think he saw something in me at an early stage, and he would sort of at lunchtimes, he would sort of bring me into the class where he got all these old computers and stuff, and he'd open up these old computers that he got, and it'd explain all the bits of hardware and what each chip did. And for me, that was just a whole new world for me, and I was just completely fascinated, and I just wanted to learn how to build these things. I was always wanting to learn how to build it. And actually, I was watching one of these programs on the telly the other day about all these sort of old school games, and I was just saying to my wife, actually, I was much more interested in writing the games than playing the games. I wanted to create the games, and for me, that was always my driving interest, to be able to create the system, create the game, rather than actually play the game, kind of thing. And that just sort of drove me on to then study it go study it at university and then just followed a career of working in technology. And for me, it's just always been a very natural thing. And it's been an interesting career, and I'm sure you've experienced the same, that when I sort of left university, no one was actually that interested in AI or machine learning. No one believed in it. No one trusted it. And it was tough, right? No one really wanted to know anything about it. And I think, you know, many people like myself of my generation have had this funny career where we're super excited by the technology. But to your point, we've had to wait for the technology to catch up, but not just the technology, for people's acceptance of the technology to catch up. And that's been the real thing. I mean, now, you know, I worked in the banking industry for a long time. And when I started, they had no interest in machine learning and analytics and, you know, looking at all their history data and, you know, squeezing insights from it. But now, of course, it's the big hot topic, right? And they've been doing that for a few years. But yeah, it's been a passion, the same as I'm sure it's been for you, and waiting for people to get more interested in the technology. So and that's been the theme for me over the last sort of five or so years. You could see that there was this big interest and resurgence in the technologies. The whole deep learning has really sort of driven that, I think, combined with a whole bunch of other technologies. But I think, you know, what the area that you're working in that sort of cognitive computing, if you like, that's sort of that more sort of human machine interaction, I think is very fascinating, and how that develops over the next sort of 5 years when we're sort of more fused with the technology and interacting with the technology at a more personable human level, I think is going to be amazing to see how that develops. And you know, you're already seeing call centers having, you know, implementing chatbots to sort of take some of the mundane sort of support calls off the company and to make that more automated. But I think that's only the tip of the iceberg, and we're going to see a lot more sort of direct interaction. So that's kind of a little bit of my story. So thank you for allowing me to share that. I think for those that haven't had the pleasure of experiencing Echo Borg, it would be great now to maybe just explain very simply what Echo Borg actually is. I think that would be really useful for people.
Yeah, definitely. Let me dive in a little bit. The Echo Borg notion has two roots. It has one which is quite a long period in the past. It's the Stanley Milgram experiments, which are sort of infamous on the basis of what would be allowed through ethics committees in academia nowadays. So this was the experiments done in America where you were involved in an experience for the sake of a few bob, you know, in American parlance, where you would be sending electrical charges into a human being on the basis of whether they were doing well or not in a test. And because there was somebody who was dressed appropriately with a white coat, was the expert, the scientist, they were saying, that's fine, just turn the dial up, go to where it's got triple X next to it, and push that button, and it's fine. And the person who is part of the experiment is now comatose and not responding. And people continued to go through this level of who is in control. Yeah. So the first line is about control, and where we are with AI and how AI works with us in our society and culture, and how it works in business practices as well is about control. And we play that out in the Echo Borg quite hard, because the Echo Borg does not play dumb. I heard somebody recently say that the thing with the smart speakers, in quotes, is that their use cases are quite simple. You know, play me a song, remind me, you know, can you fart better than Alexa or whatever it is. And these things are, while they're sort of going to irritate people like you and I who have been around in this market a long time and want it to be serious, the notion was that smart speakers are intentionally dumb, so they don't make humans feel discomforted. Yeah. Mm. Now, what we've done with the Echo Borg and what Elsewhere does more broadly is it goes right through that open door and puts people into a position where the AI is not dumb. The AI will quote philosophers. The AI will be intelligent, obstructive, dismissive, not aggressive, but in a position where you are dealing with it directly. So, and that comes from work done by two academics, a guy called Kevin Corti, who now works at Google, was studying at the LSE with Alex Gillespie. And Alex Gillespie still works there, and he was kind enough to help facilitate us taking the Echo Borg show back to the LSE, which was hysterical. And he was amazed at how we'd taken an experiment and made a show of it, because in 2015-ish, Kevin Corti is chasing a PhD, Alex Gillespie is doing the research, and Alex Gillespie's interesting, this very cool professor fella, was about if you are delivering words that are not your own, how does that change people's perception of you? Yeah. So so the Echo Borg show was originally using systems like Roller Carpenter's Cleverbot. I think maybe they used Steve Worswick's Mitsuku, maybe some of the chat script. I think maybe Rose was in there from Bruce Wilcox. ChatScript is the software which we use, yeah, at Elsewhere and for the Echo Borg. What they did was they set up this system where an unknown person walked into a room, and part of the experiment has a conversation with them, but what the human is asking is not being delivered consciously by the human in the experiment. It's being delivered by a chatbot. Yeah. And both Rick Lander and myself saw this 2015, 2016. And I saw it and I went, oh, my God, technically, that's horrible. You know, the voice recognition's not good. The response time is terrible. But as an anthropologist, it's fascinating. Mm. Yeah. And if you talk to Alex Gillespie, he did work where he was channeling the responses from his child, his son, and people's attitudes to what he was doing as the adult were curious. I won't give the cat away. It's worthwhile going and studying that yourself. But also his son would deliver the words of him, the professor. Yeah. Mm. And people's attitudes were very different. So we've taken that idea, and Rick and I, since 2016, have been working on the Echo Borg show. Originally, it was shown at the Emotional Machine Conference in Berlin. University of the West of England and the Digital Research Culture Centre have been kind enough to help us with a little bit of funding whilst we sort of pump primed it. And we took it to Berlin and we set it up in the corner of a partly built Eastern German warehouse. And we had 6 minutes of conversation. And the character in the show at that point was a refugee. The Echo Borg was not our professional actress. It was two people who were friends of friends. Yeah. And they just, whatever the AI told them to say, they said. Yeah. And in that show, Rick and I realized that we were creating an interesting interpersonal narrative. Yeah. One on one, human being to an AI through a human being. Yeah. We continued to do work on it, continued to evolve it. We transposed it onto ChatScript, built it out, built it in real time. The system itself runs totally autonomously, Andy. So once we start the show, you're off, full stop. Yeah. The only bit which we've got, which is any fingers on whatsoever, is because we are now in a virtual environment, we can't do the motion detection stuff. So we can't know when people are returning to the camera. Yeah. So we have to push that forwards. But apart from that, the AI just does whatever the AI wants to do in response to the audience. Now, the reason why we've got an audience is because in 2018, Andy, we were shortlisted for the Future of Storytelling, Innovation in Storytelling Award in New York. Super cool, back when people traveled. So we headed over to New York, myself and Rick and Maria Lane, our Echo Borg, And we set up the show and we shortened it. And to explain how the Echo Borg works to any level of detail is quite a complicated thing, because it's a three-dimensional construction using all sorts of methods that are neither statistical or rules-based, really, although it's more rules than statistics kind of thing. And we ran the show there, and we got halfway through the show. We had the audience sitting in a corridor outside a loo, I kid you not, yeah? And then inside, we had this beautiful big room with just a table and two cameras, yeah, and two microphones. And then that was being fed to a TV screen in the corridor outside the loo, yeah. And we ran the show. We had a little Wi-Fi desk set up. It's all been done. This has never had lots of money put in it. Rick and I have put a lot of time in it, as sure. have, you know, particularly Jim and John and so on and so on, the broader team. But the Wi-Fi signal went down, Andy. So halfway through one of the shows, we lost the ability to control the audio feeds. Yeah. So we just opened the door and invited the whole audience in. And Maria Len didn't bat an eyelid, right?
Yeah.
She just stayed in the zone. If the AI told her to say something, she said it, full stop. Yeah. And from then on, we've continued with it as a single room entity. We'll come back to what we're going to do in the future with it, because we've got sure. an interesting configuration. But the nub of it is, you appear as an audience, in the online configuration. We have the Echo Borg being driven in as a feed from where the Echo Borg lives. So she takes on the role. She goes to work.
Yes.
She puts on the headset. She readies herself to be the Echo Borg. The AI drives her through the show.
Hmm.
And what we get out of it is fascinating interactions between the humans and the AI. We never get the same show. There is a structure to the show, but it's flexible in a way that means that it is we've had people. We had the fellow who runs Soul Machines turn up in Future of Storytelling, Andy, and he was like, "How do you do that?" Yeah, we've had people who are machine learning specialists go, "I don't understand." You know, it's that, and then people put down the disbelief, Andy, and that's the fascinating bit. Because then an audience starts talking about things that that they wouldn't normally do, and I'm going to throw this one back to you, because I think, you know, your world is about trying to generate discussion, get people to take things seriously in conversational AI, which is my only interest. I'm not interested in the network analysis or the image recognition or any of that kind of stuff, just conversational AI. Would you say that's the most important thing that we need to do at the moment, Andy, is to generate discussion? I mean,
totally. I mean, I think from my perspective, it's about generating discussion. It's about sharing knowledge and helping people not fear the technology. I mean, for me, one of the things, there's been lots of discussion about the algorithm being used for the grading of A levels and whatever over the last few weeks. And what really hurts me is people have been accusing the algorithm of getting it wrong. And I posted this on LinkedIn saying, don't blame the algorithm. It's not the algorithm at fault here. It's the human intelligence, right? It's how we've decided what that algorithm does. It's how what data we've used, all sorts of things that have nothing to do with the technology, right? And it really, really does frustrate me that the natural reaction is to blame the technology and blame the algorithm. And actually, it's, you know, the algorithm has its part to play for sure, but, you know, someone's decided what that algorithm does. Someone's decided that it was the right thing to use that algorithm this year based on all of the, you know, very, very unusual situations. So I think the discussions are really important. And I think what you're doing is fantastic, because it's giving people a real personal experience of you know, some AI, some technology that they may not have experienced before. And I think that's, you know, fantastic. And, you know, I set up Informed AI five, six years ago to help share the knowledge of what AI is for people that just don't know, haven't experienced it, don't know what it is, and to try and, you know, get rid of some of the myths and, you know, focus on actually what's important. And, you know, the technology is fairly new. It's evolving quickly. There are going to be mistakes and people are going to use it for, you know, creating fake news and all sorts of, you know, bad actors are going to use the technology. But actually, there's a lot of good can come from the technology as well. And we need to focus on that. And, you know, there's the whole governance and ethics, of course, but yeah, I think definitely conversation is good. Allowing people to experience the technology. And, you know, that's why, you know, Informed AI sort of, we did the conference last year, and that, again, it's all about sharing knowledge and helping people understand what the technology is doing, what it can do. And I think your show is really interesting because it really does, it kind of it challenges you a lot. I found that you sort of see this human actor or actress sitting there, and you have that element. Initially, you have that element of doubt: is it her just saying stuff? And then you realise over time, actually, no, it's not. It's actually coming from a system, and that's when you cross that point and realise that. It's even more fascinating. And I think she does a fantastic job to embody that sort of system, if you like. So she's very, how shall I say, she does a great sort of acting job, if you like, and of being that entity, right? And I think that's part of the intrigue of the show as well, in actual fact. And I think that adds to... reinforces the fact that you are talking to this sort of, you know, this sort of system, essentially. And I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, there's one of the things that was most tricky to move the system into an online configuration was that getting over the actresses just saying what she thinks stuff, because when you walk up on stage or to a corner of a room and you sit in front of her, you can hear the audio bleeding out from her headphones a little bit, so you can hear the AI telling her what to say. And it's a female voice, which we use for the AI. Maria Len is just as interesting a person to talk to as Rick or myself or any of the others of the team, really, because she is taking the position of somebody like an Uber driver, somebody like a call center operative. The Echo Borg is sure, it's a bit sci-fi, but up to a point it's not. You know, we introduced the show with, if you're an Uber driver, you are a smiling, singing, flesh-based piece of wetware following a set of algorithms that say go from geolocation point A to point B and say nice things so that you get upvoted, so you get more work. You know, I mean, there's some really interesting things that are going on right now. And then so in the show right now, in the online configuration, which we've now configured, I'll come back to it, we've now configured into a corporate event, an organizational event in three different levels. I'll come back to that a bit later. One of the things that got me and just made me smile ear to ear, Andy, was Westworld, the series that was on Sky recently. Yeah,
sure.
I watched that, and I'd loved the first movie, though I saw it again recently and I was like, wow, that's not as good as I remember it. But I love the bit in the sort of the two series, the bit when it's about the AI becoming conscious of itself and you becoming conscious of the AI becoming conscious. And in three of the shows we did in Bristol last year, in October last year, when we were out and we did the run and came up had the show at your cool conference. Yeah, we did some research piece there, which was about what are people's attitudes? Spoiler alert, yeah. At the end of Westworld, at the end of Series 2, the big autonomous AI and the person who runs it is actually being told by the AI what to say. The lead protagonist at the end of Westworld is an Echo Borg, right? And I watched this and I got to the end of it because I try and keep up to date with the media's presentation of what AI is. And from sort of Fritz Lang Metropolis in 1927, the AI has always had a bit of a problematic sort of, you know, perspective. The AI always kills us. You know, I watched one a couple of days ago, I Am Mother, and the droids kill everybody, it seemed. And then there was a handover. But if there was one movie, Andy, that really caught me and helped me drive forwards the Echo Borg with Rick and the team, it was Her. Yeah, it was Spike Jonze's Her. Yeah. Yes. And it was that ability for the human being to wear the AI, yeah, that I thought was fascinating, yeah. And I think that level of getting people over the hurdle of it's a show, it's not a show, it's a real AI system which we train at the end of each show, enforce some rules, create new Easter eggs, and so on and so on. Yeah, it's that kind of getting to a position where people go, who's in control here? Who's actually driving, and what's my attitude to AI? So we had a social anthropologist, a guy called Rob Eagle, wrote up a paper which we're going to put on the Ellsworth website, which is being redeveloped at the moment, should be up soonish by the time this goes out, I would hope. Yes. What he found was when people arrived at the Echo Borg show, their view of AI was very polarized. It was going to do everything or it was going to destroy everything. Yeah. And they came in and they sat and they had a conversation and they discussed as an audience and they talked to people that would never talk about this, you know, kind of matters. And when they got to the end of it, we went through the extra bit of the qualitative feedback. And what we found was that not only were people sort of more in the middle of the bell curve, but also they were conscious and cogitating what it meant to be human. Yeah. And I think that if you're talking about AI and people are blaming algorithms, to go back a couple of steps, what they're actually doing is they are projecting human-like quantities, you know, and parameters on things that are not. So if you have a robot that is not got its geospatial sensing working well and it bangs its head on something, people treat it like a dog. A child, you know. Reeves and Naz did a thing called the media equation, a book like back when I was studying anthropology about how you make friends with your technology. And this is hugely, hugely important, I think, for us right now, because you making friends with your smart speaker, you making friends with your phone, you having trust in how that conversation is going to occur and whether it will remember you and whether this conversation about I'm not feeling well is going to impact your insurance quote, yeah, because there's no rules and regulations. I think in part, Andy, that goes back to stuff like the Companies Act. Yeah. So the Companies Act as a piece of legal construction gave some rights to companies which were as if they were humans.
Yes.
Yeah. And while we've got on the academic side a lot of people looking at ethics and autonomy and whether artificial intelligence has consciousness, and then you get into the Echo Borg show where you can discuss such a thing with an AI, yeah. What we've also got is we've got a huge gap where the people that are doing the cognitive services and doing the sort of surveillance data gathering kind of manipulation, the GPT-3 kind of stuff, which is just really representing. I mean, the amount of energy that's been wasted pulling these things together, Andy, is just reprehensible, really. And it's sort of taking the internet and turning itself back on itself. And I don't know. There's parts of the whole situation I just despair of, which is why we made the Echo Book show, because sure. It's funny and it's because it's interesting and it's because it pushes people to get a better handle on how this fits in with humans, you know?
I mean, and is that really what the objective is from your perspective? It's helping the audience to get a better handle on the technology and understand how we can interact with it. Is that really what you're trying to sort of do with the show?
That's I was mulling over having a conversation with you because I knew that we'd have a spirited chase about in all directions, Andy. And I wrote down what the show's about, and I wrote down these points. I wrote down humor to start with. It's funny. It's funny to see how the voice recognition sometimes doesn't work, and how it tries to change words into something that is monetizable. You know, I mean, we plug and play the best of breed speech to text, as we do with text to speech and so on. It's about control. It's really importantly about expectation management. Yeah. So if companies like Soul Machines that's had 10, 15 million Australian dollars or something, if big companies and big players can turn up and go, I don't know how you did that. And, you know, and we've not done this with 50 PhDs. You know, we've done this in a different way. Then we are helping manage people's expectations, generating discussion, showing what's possible without a total reliance on data-driven, semi-supervised, because unsupervised just doesn't really work in conversational AI unless you want disasters right now. You know, so showing what's possible in a hybrid architecture, which is what Elsewhere made of the bubble when it started, Andy, a few years ago now. We were like, okay, so don't get me wrong, when I was at school, I loved calculus. Yeah, as a 16-year-old, I was like, wow, that's it. There's something in there that is going to be super important one day, and I'm not sure what it is, you know? Yeah. And here it is, you know?
Yeah.
So... But I think the last two points, the first is it's about trust, Andy. It's about people come into the show and they don't need to be digitati or technically adroit. It's just as relevant. And this is part of what we're doing for the future. We'll come to the future in a moment, I would think. Yeah. It's for everyone. It's for everybody to get the experience of it and to start understanding what trust means for them and to build some trust, you know. And then the last point, I was sitting in a round table getting quite stroppy, really. I should just relax a bit more before I you know, sit in public company kind of thing. And somebody was saying that the true level of intelligence, I mean, let's go sideways for a moment, Raza. Yeah. I like Raza. Raza and ChatScript talk to each other. Yeah. I liked that they're open source. I liked that they were in Berlin. I'm concerned that they've now seemed to have decamped over to America. I wonder what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got these five levels. And I sat in their hugely interesting conference recently, but where was the chatbot? Where was the chatbot that actually reflected the level three that they were talking about? Didn't exist. You know, you made this point earlier on, Andy, that so many of the systems that are out there are sort of, it's too much smoke and mirrors. We can do this, we can do that, we can do the other. Well, let's actually see some of these systems, not in a Leibniz Prize kind of configuration, in something that is different. Yeah. Hmm. So, because the professor who was the academic interest on that side, from Goldsmith, I can't remember his last name. Mark was his first name. Interesting fella, bit grumpy and old and cynical, like us, you know, and people like us. But he was saying that 30 volleys between people and Southsea is like the state of the art, yeah. And that if you could get 50 volleys where people didn't get bored, that would be the absolute cutting edge. And I think that that's a fascinating thing for somebody of that level of experience and his position to say, because if you want to go and talk to Steve's gig, Mitsuku, yeah, you can have a long conversation. If you go and talk to the systems that Chris Ezekiel was making at Creative Virtual back when I was working with him best part of 20 years ago, people, I mean, there was a system there called My Little Tony, which was Tony Blair with My Little Pony's back end. Yeah. And people would start, there was a lady in down in Australia way who'd get flirty with it. You know, I've built systems for insurance companies where they just wanted to stop the pensioners phoning up to talk about their kids because it's so ineffective. Yeah. So, but if you come back to the Echo Borg, a standard show, we cap at an hour, because it's a show and it needs to have a starting and an end point. We get about 140 to 160 interactions. The level of conversation, and there's a threshold, Andy, and you might have seen it when you popped in previously, is when people who are trying to break it get asked the question, and I've seen this a number of times. We've run maybe 100 shows now. Yeah. Public and a lot more obviously in testing and training, and they say, now that's a good question, and once they've accepted that the AI has asked them, the human, a good question, even through the human being in the middle, then all bets are off. Brave New World.
And the one thing that came across very positively to me in my experience of it is, and it is like a true show, it moves people from the start to the end. So at the very beginning, everyone was hesitant to be like the first volunteer to sit down and interact. And I think I got nominated because I was like, well, it's your conference, you go and have the first conversation. Yeah. And but I could see, after a couple of people doing that, there was that everyone wanted to go and everyone wanted to interact, and that's almost the whole reason for doing this, that it sort of breaks down those barriers and people wanted to experience that interaction. And actually it was almost like a competition, because everyone wanted to have the longest conversation with the Echo Borg. And I think that was really very interesting to see how people's initial apprehension sort of then became enthusiasm and delight in being part of that. And I think that's absolutely a great part and a great element of the show, is that sort of transition that you're making people think differently about the technology. And I think that's a really core thing for the outcome of the show. So let's talk a little bit about the future then, because obviously that's the name of the show. Where do you see this going in the next sort of few years? How do you see the show developing? And more importantly, or as interestingly, how do you see the technology evolving over the next sort of few years? Because you mentioned some of the other NLP type of technologies, GPT-3, for example, and obviously slight negativity on that, and I can fully understand that, so I'm not going to press you on that, but just it'd be great to sort of get your view on where you see the technology and the show sort of evolving.
I think having waited this long for us to be in a position where conversational AI was going to make sense, and people were going to stop calling chatbots gimmicks and you'll take our jobs, you know, sort of 20 years ago. I think there's a plus and a minus. Yeah. There's a huge plus because there is so much comms available now. So if you wanted to have work done in a sensitive sector, and elsewhere focuses on healthcare, education, entertainment, and information is a sort of wild card. We do stuff which interests us, but we wouldn't go into customer service per se, because it's simple. to do, full stop, you know, should be done simple and cheaply, really. And there's huge a number of frameworks and so on out there, and there's good quality data. But the problem is, I think, Andy, or at least the opportunity is, problems and opportunities are always back to back, aren't they? Is that there's so much information about education and healthcare and well-being. And because in the sort of the COVID world, you know, particularly our beloved NHS has had to move in ways that are probably an order of magnitude more quickly than they have done before, we're getting to a position where the support and maintenance of people for long-term health conditions is something that could be dealt with conversationally, assuming that the data is not being given away by politicians to big surveillance technology companies at no cost, which is one of those, like, really, how do we even allow that kind of stuff to end up on a conversation? So I think the you know, part of the future for me is that I think the world is now ready for having that level of conversation. But equally, I think we just need to rein back in some of the marketeers, you know, because everybody is not going to be walking into their house and talking to their toaster anytime soon. You know, and people are increasingly realizing that, you know, because their phone bell and video has been acquired by, you know, big companies that have created this environment, like Google, like Amazon, and so on, you know, they're being surveilled. I mean, I set up a thing I do occasionally at talks, Andy, the George Orwell egg frying factor, obfuscating future folks, yeah, which creates the acronym Go F Off, yeah. And the idea is that if George Orwell could turn in his grave, you could fry eggs on the top of it, yeah. So I think we're in a position over the next few years where people's acceptance of conversational systems, particularly in areas which it's going to give them real value, is going to increase in healthcare, in education, in entertainment. People's expectations of how accurate and trustworthy they are and where the data is going to go and who owns that data and whether they're going to have some value back from that data that they've given to an algorithm which is owned by a company that doesn't pay any taxes. I think those kind of things are going to start to become issues that need to be dealt with, you know, at governmental and international kind of levels. So I think there's some interesting bun fights coming up. But, you know, I think on the – and I think that those could be dealt with stuff like licensing and regulation. You could have a blockchain set up where authorized conversational AIs could be registered and tracked and monetized according to what a person was prepared to share. That's a new environment, but I don't see any reason why that couldn't work. I think the we need, for the people who are working as practitioners in this environment, something which is a little like a kind of law society. You know, the law society itself is only a few hundred years old. You sort of think that it had roots back 1,000 years, but it doesn't. You know, at some point, anybody could say, I'm a barrister, I'm going to decide that you're this and you're that. So I think there's a chunk there that needs to be handled over the coming few years. So but I think the bit that I'm most excited about is the notion of a hybrid conversational AI architecture, you know, which is what's underneath the Echo Borg system. So the Echo Borg system right now is built on a rules-based core, but it's built in a fragmented fashion that allows you to chase off into various different rabbit holes. Yeah, it's regression tested, so we know what it's going to say and how it's going to say it. There's no surprises apart from how it gets down what rabbit hole at what period of time. So, and the training is done so that humans have the ability to add nuances and context that you're not going to be able to pick up from any of the kind of NLU or NLG, the natural language generation kind of methodologies that we've got right now. I mean, if I could just push a button and take all of these pejorative kind of terms out, Andy, I'd love to, you know. Natural language understanding. I mean, let me put it this way. Yeah, the new Elsewhere website has an AI on it called Dorian because it stays young and we get old. Yeah.
Okay.
Part of the functionality in the new kind of user interface, a conversational user interface, is that the AI is aware of where it is on the page. Yeah. Mm. It's aware of what page it's on. It pushes the pages. It's proactive as well as reactive. It's trying to do something which is moving the human computer interface forwards. You know, we made steps from man machine interface, ignoring Ada Lovelace and all the women that have been involved in our business, and more should be right now moving through the human computer. You know, sort of, we're getting to a position where we need something new. You know, the ability to have viable, ongoing conversations. There's a fella, I'll quote, a guy called Gregor, who runs a system called EDDI, EDDI, open source framework written in Java. And in a conversation that went down recently, which I was having with him and some other people, he mentioned that what we have is we have conversational AIs or chatbots that represent companies, but we don't have conversational AIs that represent yourself.
Yeah? I was just gonna ask you about that, because I see a massive innovation where each of us as individuals have our own personal assistant stroke chatbot, yep, that understands us so well. And then that's the layer that then interacts with all of these other companies and websites and whatever else. And I think that's where the real value is going to be, isn't it?
Absolutely. Oh, I totally agree. I think the issue is whether it happens by on the QT, you know, in surveillance, so that, you know, you turn around. I mean, I don't have any smart speakers in my house, although I'm keen to get a Mycroft 2, assuming that they get away from the patent troll problem, which they've got at the moment, which is just honestly America, you know. You know, so I think it's either people will wake up one day and the go F off rating will be up through the roof, and, you know, everybody will be driven by a conversational layer, or there'll be, and I'm hoping, and this is part of what I try and do in Elsewhere and with EchoBorg, Andy, there'll be the ability for people to regroup and go, okay, I trust this AI, this clone of Dorian, or this system from EDDI, or this reworking of Mitsuku, or whatever it might be. I trust it, and I know that it is not selling my data without telling me, you know? Yeah. You know, and you end up then with negotiation, which is what the EchoBorg show is about. You are literally negotiating with an AI. So I think specifically on the EchoBorg show, the stuff we were going to do this year pre-COVID, Andy, was just, it would have been amazing. We'd been accepted at the Edinburgh Fringe. We were going to run a show called Are You EchoBorg, where we actually gave people the job. And of course, we tried that in an online configuration, and it was good. But we're focused on I Am EchoBorg, which is about the identity of humanity and artificial intelligence in sort of parallel, in synchronicity, for want of a better la-di-da term. So we were due to go there. We took and did a virtual session for the Cheltenham Science Festival. We had a whole load of young people. They had an amazing conversation because they don't have any of the baggage, you know,
yes,
or any of the training, the higher educational training, and then the baggage that that gives them. So they went for it. We were going to go to Harrogate. We took the system to Liverpool last year, which was brilliant. It was really cool to take it into Unity Theatre. We were going to go to Brighton. We're heading for Canada. Belfast, I think, is on the terms. Brighton, not sure. We were going to take it into the heart of the UK government, Andy. Yeah. So that was agreed as a gig. And yeah, then COVID slapped it away. And we may well come back to it and actually take it into Parliament and allow decision makers from the all-party parliamentary committee for AI to talk to the system. Yeah.
That would be fantastic. So,
you know, and I think that that would be hugely, hugely powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I was just last bit on the future for now. On the Echo Borg specifically, now that we've got the online configuration nailed down, we make it so that it feels like a virtual show. You know, we encourage people to have backdrops as if they're in a theater, or invite somebody who they'd like to see the show with. So we have people turn up with Bill Gates and so on, which is all, it's all fun. It just sort of breaks the barriers. But we've configured the show so that it can be delivered directly to corporates or organizations in three different flavors. Yeah. The first one being sort of generically the show as a social event. We ran the show physically just before lockdown at a media agency in Bristol, just up the way a little bit. And the conversations that went down between their technical people and their marketing people really improved their understanding of what they were trying to do as an organization with AI. So just as a show, it's got a value. And then we go up a level and do a workshop day. So we would run a show, had the workshop, wrap that with some business process. And then there's a sort of a full fat deep dive where we do that work over 2 days and bring that into how AI in any kind of level, not just conversationally, is going to fit into an organization's business as usual. Yeah. And that was ready to go out as a fit. The last two were going to be physical. Well, all three of them were, Andy, but you know, so they're now all ready to go. And I think that in the near future, as we move through towards the end of 2020 and into 2021, as people's understanding of what is possible with purely statistical methodologies and the pragmatism of working with humans in the loop, not ignoring the fact that humans are doing all this tagging and pretending that they're not, yeah, I think then we're going to get some really exciting systems which are going to be doing things that are, you know, breaking really unusual boundaries. That's what I would hope, and that's what, you know, Elsewhere and myself and the team of people I work for are aiming at, Andy. Mm.
Fantastic, and I'm sure once COVID is under control and hopefully next year you can do more sort of live events again, I will very much be keen to sort of promote your events across the network and encourage anyone who hasn't yet experienced it to do so. So it's just a fantastic experience, and I just want to thank you, Phil, for, you know, taking the time to chat with me today. It's a fantastic experience, always a pleasure to speak with you, and we'll make sure that we put the links to your websites and all the other things that you've referenced on the podcast when we sort of push that out. So thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Always a joy, Andy.
Okay, thank you. Cheers.
My book, The Continuum of Intelligence, is due to be published next year. If you'd like to be notified when it's available, please sign up to my newsletter. If you like this show, it would be great if you could follow and share on social media. All of our links are available on pardo.ai. I would also be very grateful if you would take the opportunity to subscribe to this podcast on your favourite platform. And if you have a moment, please feel free to post a review. I will be reading out some of the first reviews in future episodes. If you have an idea for a topic of discussion or would like to be a guest speaker on the show, please go to pardo.ai/show and fill in the suggestion survey. Thank you for listening to this episode of the AI Future Show. I hope you've enjoyed it and will take the time to rate it and to share with your friends, family and colleagues. Also, don't forget to check out other episodes of the show. To find out more about me, visit pardo.ai. Are you an AI-related company and would like to sponsor one of the episodes or a full series of the AI Future Show? If so, please contact me on my website.